Welcome to this week's edition of The Green. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. There's just over a week left before Newark area voters in the 18th Representative District head to the polls to decide who will replace State Rep. Michael Barbieri. But as we told you last week, the September 12th special election to fill the seat Barbieri left to lead the State Division of Substance Abuse and Mental Health has wider implications. Should Democrats lose a seat, they will no longer hold a supermajority in the House that allows them to pass tax or fee increases without any Republican support. And that would come just a year after Democrats lost their Senate supermajority when Republican Bryant Richardson unseated longtime Democratic State Senator Robert Venables in the Laurel area. So that makes this race between Democrat David Bentz, a legislative aide for Barbieri, and Eileen O'Shaughnessy Coleman, a Republican who's lived in the district for nearly 25 years, a critical one. And with that in mind, we sat down with both candidates recently to learn about them and where they stand on the issues. Last week, you'll recall we talked to Eileen O'Shaughnessy Coleman. This week, we hear from David Bentz.
What prompted you to run for the seat when it came open?
So it was really my passion for public service. It's something that I've been doing. I've been working with the legislature for a couple years now. The last two really being the point person for the 18th district in the General Assembly, the person that they get on the phone when they call and have issues that they want to talk about or make us aware of or need some sort of assistance navigating the bureaucracy, the maze of state services. So I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed helping people. And when this seat opened up, I just felt as though if I wanted to continue to be able to do that, that this was a good opportunity for me to step up and be the direct representative.
So I imagine that you feel like you have a tremendous familiarity with not only the constituents of this district, but also the issues that are really on their minds.
Absolutely. You know, it's something that I've had the chance to speak with them about, both in previous campaigns and then also, you know, working for their representative. You know, I understand what issues matter to them, you know, what they want us to be doing in Dover and what sort of services they depend on and what they would like us to focus on a little bit more than some other things. So I do feel like I've got a lot of experience. I feel like I'm going to be able to hit the ground running from day one. There'll be no learning curve. I'll just be able to get to work for the residents and give them the sort of service that they deserve from day one.
Let's talk about a couple of issues. And certainly one of the biggest ones this past year was the budget itself. Obviously, last year the General Assembly was dealing with a shortfall, filled it largely with one-time money. Another shortfall, perhaps between $130, $170 million is possible this coming year. What do you feel lawmakers should be doing to deal with this budget situation?
Whoever wins this race is certainly going to have a challenging first year. And when you think about it, this is really what we're running for. We're running for this one year because, well, we would have to run again in 16. So I think that this is going to be the all-encompassing challenge that we're going to face in Dover next year, and it's going to take everybody working together down there, Democrats, Republicans, the governor, the legislature. Everybody's going to have to work together because you can't close the sort of deficit you're talking about, $150 million, if it's around that range. You can't close it with only one method. You can't just cut your way out of it. You can't just tax everybody and to close that deficit. So we really need to have people down there who are willing to look at all the options and see what's going to be the most fair way to do this so that everybody is shouldering the burden, middle class, wealthy, that everybody is kind of chipping in and doing what they can to balance this budget in a way that is fair to all Delawareans.
Having been down there working for Representative Barbieri last year, do you feel like having some firsthand knowledge of what happened last year and what options were on the table last year gives you a little bit of a head start in dealing with the issue this coming year?
It does. And, you know, it's like you said, we kind of used one-time money. We kind of, I think, found the kind of the quickest way to get this done, unfortunately, and now the problem's even larger. So this year is really going to be the challenge where we can't do that. We have to figure out long-term solutions to our spending and our revenue problems. You know, our revenue is largely, I think, unreliable as far as making long-term projections are concerned when we're depending on things like casino revenue, S-cheat and things like that that are very hard to predict long-term. And our spending could be looked at as well. And I know that there's going to be an effort to do that because, like you said, we're not going to be able to balance $150 million deficit with just new revenue. So we're going to have to start spending smarter as well.
This race is critical regarding the budget. If you are victorious, the Democrats would keep their supermajority in the House, which does allow Democrats to pass tax and fee bills without any GOP support, at least in the House. Does that add a little urgency to you as you're campaigning? Is it something that is on your mind as you're campaigning for this seat?
I'm not really thinking about that so much as I am as far as the campaign's concerned. I'm really focused on just talking to the voters, seeing what they're going to want from me, what they're going to want from their representative when they get in there, what issues matter to them. But what you're talking about with the supermajority already lost in the Senate, mm-hmm. I think it has a little bit less impact because we're going to need buy-in from both parties to get this done anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw this last year with the transportation funding bill. It didn't matter that the House could pass it without any Republican votes. When it got down to it, concessions had to be made, and both parties had to compromise and give up something to get that budget deal done with that new transportation money. So we could keep a supermajority, and obviously I hope we do, because that would mean that I was victorious in this election, and I'm working hard to hopefully be the representative that the people of this district want. But it's really, regardless, we're going to have to find ways to work together down there, mm-hmm. because there's already, the situation is already as such that both parties are going to have to buy into any budget solution we have.
One other major issue last year was education. Certainly for the constituents in this district, it's a serious one. Priority Schools Initiative was kind of ground zero here in the Christina School Districts. The district itself also struggling financially because of two failed referendums. Obviously, opt-out was a big issue, particularly in this district as well. What do you see as your responsibility as a legislator to address the issues of education? What do you feel are the priorities in education?
One of the top priorities with education is certainly how we're spending the money we're bringing in for education. It's like you said, this district has, the Christina School District, which is in the 18th, has been really the focal point of that, with the failed referendum and then the result being laying off of teachers, and that really only exacerbates the problem, it doesn't make it better. So we need to do a better job of using our education money. Again, the referendum model is something that presents a lot of challenges. It is, again, it's another revenue structure that is largely unpredictable and is tough to rely on and account on when you're talking about long-term accounting. And we need to do a better job of spending our money on education and making sure it's getting into the classroom and not being spent at the top at Department of Education. I mean, I understand in a perfect world you'd want to have a phenomenal Department of Education and phenomenal schools, but we have limited resources and we need to prioritize where we're putting them in. I think that needs to be in the classroom. I think that needs to be supporting teachers so they can do the best job they can to educate our kids. My wife's a teacher, and so I kind of come from it from that, because this is what I hear every night. This my wife saying, this is what we need. I could do my job better if we had XYZ. And it's just a matter of making sure they have the tools they need, because I think we have a well-trained workforce. Teachers are more than qualified to deliver top-quality education to our students. We need to get that money into the classroom so that they have what they need to then get our kids prepared to enter into a global economy and be competitive.
Is it fair to say that a lot of these other issues, things like opt-out and priority schools, are more symptoms of the larger funding issue, that if the funding issue was better addressed in terms of education, then maybe some of these other issues would not be percolating up?
Partly. I do think that the opt-out movement is coming from a frustration of over-testing. Mm-hmm. And again, what we do with this amount of testing that we're putting on the students is we're really boxing in teachers to say the goal is to get the kid prepped for this test as opposed to getting them prepped for a career or college or something like that, or just generally learning the subject matter. And the teachers are really boxed in. They're not able to kind of use ingenuity and different pull on their past experiences and so forth to really approach each kid individually and say, what I'm going to do, this standard model that you're giving us to teach this test might work for 20 of my kids, but then I have 10 more that it's not going to work for. Mm-hmm. So how do I foster a curriculum that is going to make sure everybody's succeeding? And if I'm boxed in to just have to teach this test, it really limits what I can do and the creativity I can use to do my job to the best of my ability. And for the kids, it's really something that every day they're taking a test is a day they're not learning something new. So I have questions about that when it's so repetitive. And then we can't even be confident at this point that the information we're getting from the test is going to be useful information, and especially not going to be useful information when it comes out 6 months after the test was administered. So,
are there some other issues that you consider priorities for yourself if you are elected?
Absolutely. I think one of the big problems in this district, because this is very specific to this district, it's really all northern Newcastle County, but this district sees it a lot, is how incapable our roads are of handling the amount of cars. You know, in this district, we have the Christiana Mall, we have the hospital, we have the Bank of America building, we're about to develop the Cavaliers Country Club site. All these cars, they're not just people who live here, but they're people who come here to shop and go out to eat, go to the mall and stuff like that, or come to work. Our roads are completely incapable of handling the amount of cars on the road. And it's one thing to be sitting in traffic. It's another thing where it's even spilled over into this, where now there's safety issues to be concerned about. And then DLDOT has a lot of plans to address some of these. This district has some of the most dangerous intersections in Newcastle County, where there's a lot of accidents. And DLDOT has plans to fix these. It's a matter of making sure that they get the funds and that we're prioritizing these sort of road projects. I think that that's important because, again, it's one thing to be sitting in traffic. That certainly lowers people's quality of life and is frustrating. But it's a whole other ballgame when we're talking about safety. So we really need to make sure that our roads are safe and efficient. And if we are able to do that, the area becomes more attractive to businesses who want to come in and know that they'll be able to operate effectively and get their employees in on time and get their products out on time, and hopefully make the area more attractive to new businesses as well.
Special elections are kind of a unique animal. Short amount of time to organize, to campaign, tough to get people's attention and to get people to turn out. How have you been navigating this process and kind of tailoring what you're trying to do to the circumstances of a special election?
So it's a sprint, right? It's, you know, it's a six-week election. It's very fast, and it's really just a matter of getting out there, hitting the pavement every night, knocking on doors, and making sure you're talking to as many people as you can and letting them know who you are, letting them know what this election is and what it's about and why we're having it, and, you know, hopefully convince them that it's important to go out and vote, that this has implications, that there's two distinct candidates in this race and there's a choice to be made. And I believe we're doing a good job of doing that. I have a strong volunteer base as well as myself, and we're out there every night. We're out there all day Saturday, and we're just really getting our message out there and letting people know who I am and what I'm all about.
And this is kind of a unique district, too. I mean, certainly the registration edge would go to the Democrats and yourself, but it is a district that has had a history of electing Republicans, specifically Terry Spence, for quite some time. Do you feel like this is a district which is more likely to look at the candidates individually and not necessarily just along party lines?
I honestly feel that every district's like that. I mean, if you look up and down the state, there's been not as many now, but for a long time there's been Democrats elected in Sussex County. Mm-hmm. And again, there's been Republicans elected all over Newcastle County. And I think that it's not just in Delaware, but the way Americans even approach the polling, but they vote for a person, not a party. And they go in and they want to hear what the person's about and what priorities they have and what issues they care about. And they want to vote for the person they feel is going to share their concerns and share their interests and go down and advocate for them in Dover. And I don't think that this district's any different.
Our thanks to David Bentz for his time this week. You can find this interview on the 18th House District special election and last week's interview with Republican Eileen O'Shaughnessy Coleman online at DelawarePublic.org. Next up, we'll take a look at the first batch of Smarter Balanced student test scores that came out earlier this week. Stay with us. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media.